John Carney Rilfort.
Yeah, he didn't have a full control of his faculties, so I just had to leave it, hoping that he was going to get better. Because I had to go return to the camp, which is a strictly security business. We did most of our exercises, landing exercises, around the River Amble, because that's where our landing crafts, what we're going to go across to Normandy, were based. Then up to the right to the weather was getting worse and worse and worse, and up to the 5th of June, it was a dodgy item where they was actually going to go. But anyway, we joined the afternoon of the 5th. We went to the Amble and went on to our landing craft. But before we went on to the landing craft, 3 Commando played 6 Commando football on the field outside. And we got beat 4-0. So we didn't like 4 Commando too beating us, you know. Anyway, we got onto the landing craft, and peculiar things was the captain came round and he gave us all a paper, and we had to write our name and address on it, and we were supposed to give it to someone when we landed. So whether this was a joke or not, we never have found to this day, you know. And even Colonel Peter Young, he said, I don't know, he used to tell us that, I don't know who we're going to give this landing chitty to. But anyway, we went out into the harbour, and the weather, it was very, very rough, but not as rough as it was the day before. And then we realised that it was on. And now, with my stuff, we had all, not only did we have the extra weight of our own personal kit, which we had to look after ourselves for at least 48 hours, food, etc., etc. To get the Vickers ashore, guns ashore, I had to carry them on bikes. I had them strapped on these, the fold-up bikes, and the guns were strapped, the barrels, the tripods, and the ammunition were strapped on these bikes, and my blokes, it was just a matter of taking the weight, because we still had to wash them. Because until we actually got the guns ashore and on the ground, we couldn't really do much about it. That was the system for getting our guns ashore, to get off the landing craft, you see. Once we got off the landing craft, it was a matter of taking the guns and carrying them, because we were trained to carry all our guns, the barrels and the tripods, ammunition and water, amongst a section, which a section was six or seven men. And from then we just went across halfway across, and we came to the line of battleships. And just as we got through them, they opened up. And I think the nearest battleship to us was the Ramillies. I think it was the Ramillies. Yeah. And we just got past the Ramillies. And then there was right next to the door, there was a ship, and it fired rockets. And there must have been about 30 or 40 rockets at one go. And they were right alongside of us when they fired, you know. And I think that made everybody nearly jumped out their skin with that lot. But by that time, we were getting near the beach, and then our lot was about the second wave or third to actually land. And our first 3 boats were going in. They belonged to 6th Troop, and they got hit as they were coming in, and we were lucky, we were behind them, and the landing craft in front of us, that got hit, and that slewed round, and it more or less protected us from most of the fire that was coming. When we actually hit the beach, on the landing craft itself, you go down the long ramps, and normally what the landing craft used to do, they'd put an anchor out, a kedge anchor, so that when they hit the beach, they could pull themselves off. And the sailor who was in charge of getting the actual ramps out, he said, "I'll give you a dry landing." So he hit the beach, but he was still 3 or 4 feet away from the water, from the water's edge. So we managed to wheel our boys down, and we managed to hold on to them, but we actually dragged them through the water to get to the actual beach. And then from on, I think it was one of the hardest thing that we ever had to do was push a bike with machine guns strapped on up to the sand. It was all right once we got onto the road, which we got as fast as we could, because by that time the jetty was really pounding the beach. But our objective was to get to the Benneville Bridge, so it was a matter of going straight across country. We didn't have much chance of sticking to the road, so we took the shortest cut across, and we just simply manhandled everything till we got to the near. We got to near to the Benneville, and our main sections, the leading sections, they got to the bridge about 12 o'clock, around about that time, and Lord Lovett was on the beach. And when we got to the beach, there was still firing going on, because Major Howard was still engaging people the other side of the bridge. And his glider was actually slap bang onto the corner of the bridge as we went over. So Lord Lovett spoke to us, and at that time, my machine gun section had been separated from our officer. And Lord Lovett, he said, "Everything all right? You know where you're going?" I said, "Yeah, no problem, you know." And our objective was to get across the bridge and go to Solonel's. That was the commando's objective. And then from Solonel's to Gaborg, name of the next place, overall. But we just wanted to get over the bridge because we had to make a consolidation of the area around where the airborne were. But we got across the bridge all right, and then word came through that we couldn't go any further because all of the ground on the left was all flooded. So we had to turn then and go towards Ranville and Ranville, which are still scenes of heavy fighting going on. Our objective was Amphreville, and we got to Amphreville, and I had my guns off the bikes then, and we were carrying them then.
What kind of guns were they?
They were the Vickers machine guns, right? The Vickers machine guns, which was I'd had all along, and that was my job. I was in charge of Vickers machine gun sections, and my other the remainder of two troop. With the heavy weapons, they're comprised of 3-inch mortars. And Sergeant Agnew, he was a 3-inch mortar sergeant, and I was the Vickers sergeant. So we had to support anyone who had a call for us to support them going into attack, or fire and repel any attack that came in. So this is on D-Day itself. We got as far as, I think I wrote it down on that paper, because that's a copy of that. We got Amphreville the first day.
Well, don't worry too much about the names of places.
Yeah. And one of the, Chateau's was in Amphreville, one of the big farms with the chateau was our commando headquarters. And there's a Captain Nixon from one troop. I was, as a Vickers section, I was attached to Captain Nixon's section with the defence of the Chateau, a big long French name, but it was called after the Chateau Nixon. It was the commando headquarters. And I one Vickers gun at the corner of Amphreville. That was on the D-Day. And the Germans were attacking or probing all the time from their lines, trying to get through to us, you know. And the road from Amphreville, Longmere Road, there was lots of activity by them and by us. But our, the commando itself was going forward on patrols all day long, and all through the evening. And I had my section, as I say, in the corner of Amphreville, and that was on D-Day. And then we went right round to the next day, and then on the second D-Day, D plus one and D plus two, the Germans put big counterattacks all the way along our front, and they were probing all the time to try and find a weak spot. And my Vickers guns were, and mortars were very heavily engaged, because you could see the German troops coming across the fields, and they were within firing range of our guns, the Vickers guns. Because up till then we had no heavy artillery or tanks or anything as support, so it was purely and mainly what you actually carried, your Bren guns, your rifles, your Vickers guns and the mortars, and we repelled them, and that was it. And then on the second...
Any incidents you can remember?
Yeah, someone stole my bike. The bike I pushed all the way, I'd left it against this farmhouse wall, and while I was getting my blokes dug in the sorted out and everything, I came back and someone had stolen it, and I was more annoyed at them because I got rather attached to the bike. That was about that. But as regards any other incident, it was just like things what happens in a war. You're attacked and you fired at them and they fired at you, and that was it. You know, and we lost quite a few. And then one of our other objectives was to help the airborne take the Merville Battery. Now the Merville Battery was taken by the airborne the night prior to D-Day, but the Jerrys put an attack. I'm not quite sure, it was D plus one. They put an attack into Merville Battery, and our commando had to go and retake it. We had to go and retake Merville Battery, and we lost quite a few of blokes. And one of our majors had been with the commandos a long time. He got killed. He just stepped round a corner, and one of the horses, I can't think of his name.
This is not Pooley, is it?
Huh?
This is not Pooley, is it?
No, not John Pooley, no. He was a major, I don't know if he's... He'd been in the commando a long time.
Well, carry on anyway. What happened to you during the attack on the battery?
My troop never took part in the attack on the battery. Three troop and six troop, they took the attack on the battery, because where I had my machine gun sighted, I was actually on the left flank. So we had to, my field of fire was all to stop anyone attacking across that field. Because from between where we were, from our commander were, we were the left flank of the British Army. There was nothing between us and the sea and the Germans and the landing creatures. So we had to hold that, what's his name? And then on the second day, about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, all our second wave of gliders came in. And the sky was absolutely black with planes and gliders, and they all landed practically down in front of us at the other side of Ranville. I never will or hope to see a thing like that again. It was, you know, it's unbelievable, really, to see all these gliders coming in. And they had opposition coming in, mainly anti-aircraft fire and stuff like that. But they were, and when they landed, you see, they made another line, which gave us a bit of respite, you know. That was on C plus two, and then 3, 4, and 6. The commanders were sending patrols out all the time. We had one or two attacks, and the Germans had a few tanks in the area sending in, but not heavy attacks. And by that time, you see, we consolidated, and it was a question of holding our line and making sure that nothing had happened to let the German army come to the beaches. So that was the whole commando brigade. There's 3, 4, 6, and 45 Marine Commando. We formed all that left flank, and we held that.
Was your group right up against the sea?
No. As I say, they flooded all the ground between Solonels, the other side of Solonels and Merville Battery, and they flooded it all, so it was inaccessible anyway. And from the Merville Battery itself, we controlled, once we'd taken the Merville Battery, we controlled the ground then from there right round to Ranville and Bazoul. And we had quite our own big bridge in. And all what we had to do then was either keep them from getting in, and we'd go out as backwards and forwards. So there was all kinds of patrols doing. And one thing I was called on to do one day with the... I had a Vickers gun, and I got it in... Because by that time, we had... Our jeeps had come up, see? And I had a jeep, a Vickers gun, put in a jeep, firing backwards over the back of the jeep. And there was a farm along Longmere Road. It's called Longmere Farm, which was a kind of a no man's land. It didn't belong to us and it didn't belong to the Germans, but we all used to go in at night and come out in the morning, and they used to do the same. And we'd go in, chase them out, and they'd come in and chase us out. And this was what it was, tit for tat kind of thing. And our Peter Young decided to try this. He said, you take your Vickers gun section and go to the farm and do a kick roundabout and fire a burst at the farm itself, and that'll draw them out. This is what we're doing all the time, draw them out, which I did do. When we got up there, I had two blokes sitting behind and I was in the passenger seat directing it. When he got to the farm, he turned round and fired, and then he stalled the jeep. The driver couldn't get the jeep started. So then, it was just one of them things. He managed to get it going, and off we shot again. But it's just one of them little things that happened. And at the same time, we had, all through that period, we had three or four blokes who used to get dressed up in all kinds of camouflage kit. And they used to go out and sit in the fields, apart from our lines, you know, and just sit there all day, where they could see the Germans which is occupying their lines, and they performed sniping roles. And we had about three or four blokes, and one of them was a friend of mine, Vince Osborne. He was dressed up in all his gear, and he reckoned, or so he told, that he'd sniped three or four fellas, you know, things like that. But this is what we do, and that took us right up till to the main army when they had the breakout at St. Lo and all, you know, the old main army, American army and the British army at Corrigan and St. Lo. And our objective from then on...
What conditions were you living under during that time when you were holding the left flank?
We were actually in our slit trenches, which is, they're like little... We'd fortified them, you know, we'd had trees over our, and stuff like that, because one of the Germans, artillery units, used to fire these air bursts when they used to burst about 60 feet up.
60?
About 60, and all the shrapnel had come down, so you had to have everything over your head, you know. And then the main headquarters was in Chateau Nixon, and we could go up there and we could get the rigged up showers for us and everything up there. The conditions were basic, you know. And all our, you know, I had to make sure that my blokes that we got washed every day. It's no problem. I'd make sure that they were all washed and shaved every morning, no matter what. That was our first rule, you know.
You mean just washing the face?
No, no, wash and shave. I made sure they got a shave. Because we had our own water bowsers and stuff like that in the Chateau Nixon. And you could go up there and you could get to have showers for you and stuff like that, you know. But we just stayed basically as we were, you know. Because the further they were away, you had more chance for your own ablutions, kind of thing, you know.
Was it a bad time, this, when you were holding the line?
Bad time?
Was it a bad time?
In respect of what? The conditions, you mean? Yes, because we had to stand... We stood to every morning, just a half hour before daylight, and then we'd stand to at night, as well as all the patrols, so... and you never strayed far from where you were, because there was activity all the time, and we lost quite a lot of people through shelling. And one of our first casualties at Amphiville was one of our fellows that had been in the commandos for years, George Herbert, his name was, Lieutenant George Herbert, and he was highly decorated fella. And he was killed through a shelling of Amphiville. We lost quite a few, you know. But they're now buried at Ranville Cemetery. But we were there actually till, I think it was August the 23rd or 24th, round about that. So we'd been there from actually June the 6th, around that area, before we actually moved. And then we started to move then, because by that time the main army had gone through St. Lo and Corrigan and had made the bridgehead, and we just had to move. And our objective was these heights of Angerville, what we could see, and which the Jerry used to come down every morning, you know, and until we got them heights, Frank was very, very vulnerable for the main, what's his name. So we the whole commando brigade, by that time, Major Mild Roberts was in charge of the commando brigade. And we had to, we left our guns behind, and we the whole commando unit went on a speed march to these heights. We just went straight across country with all our Just a small kit and everything, and just small ammunition, so everyone was going to have this fight to take the heights. No heavy weapons, no nothing. So we set off the next day, and we by the same evening, we got to the heights, and after a lot of battling, we took all the heights. And after that, everything came through. And by that time, the jerry was ceasing. But that was our last big objective, Angerville, the heights of Angerville.
What opinion did you form of the German enemy at this time?
Well, we found that the German troops that were against us were very, very well trained, and they were. There was a mixture, you know. There was young and old, because if we go out and catch and take in prisoners, we found out what they were and everything, and they were. And part of the brigade against us was the Airman Gordon Light Infantry 101, and we'd met remnants of them when we were out in Italy. It was the same what's name. And strange as it sounds, some of their members knew of us, probably through Dieppe and Italy and places like that, you know. But on the whole, we found them. Well, they were real soldiers. You couldn't fault them in any way. They were just real soldiers, you know. They wouldn't give up without a fight. It wasn't in their head that no matter the size of the force against them, that they were going to pack in. They were going to pack in, and that was it. Simple as that. So every objective that we had to go to or go and take, we knew it wasn't going to be just a walk in. It was going to be, you know, it's going to be fierce, and that was it. So that's how we found.
So what happened after the breakout?
Well, when the main army came to us, they carried on through. From there, we got as far as Honfleur, and then we stopped at Honfleur. And I forget the regiment now. I think it was a Tyne and Teesside Brigade Division, TT. They crossed through us at Honfleur, and we stopped, and they carried on through up the Normandy coast to Dieppe, and that way. And the American army, and the French army, went through Paris, and they took us out the line, and we came back to Worthing. The whole commander brigade come back to Worthing.
What did you do once you got to Worthing?
Now the objective, believe it or not, when we came back to Worthing, the whole commander brigade was going out to Singapore to take Singapore. Peter Young was then, he was a brigadier, and he had already thrown out to join the 14th Army, the Burma Army, you know, and he was joining them at the Arakan, or somewhere up that way, and we were actually going to join him. That was our objective. And what we did, we came back to Worthing, and then we got more staff from the reinforcements from the holding depot from Wrexham, and made our commando up to strength again. And by that time, it was getting on September. I think it was in October, and we got sent up to Holland. They cancelled the idea of us going to Holland, what's her name? And we went to Holland, we went to Amsterdam. Yeah, I think it was Amsterdam. I was at Ostend. No, Amsterdam. I think it was Amsterdam. Went to Amsterdam. And then from Amsterdam, the old brigade had formed up properly. It is six commander, three commander,